From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
2 years ago, when our administration came into office, we set about to return Illinois to a state of growth and opportunity. Now, working together, we've begun to accomplish these goals, but there's so much that remains to be done.
An honest assessment of the state of our state needs to acknowledge how difficult the past 2 years have been. Illinois has gone 19 months without a full budget. Passing a balanced budget is Illinois' top priority and remains the top priority for Illinois House Democrats.
We need to come to an agreement with our colleagues in the Senate on a package that includes reforms, and we need to put that package over in the House. We're not there yet.
If we need more time to pull this together, I'm going to consider that encouraging. But then it's going to come time to make a decision. And so when the Senate returns to session the week of February 7th, everybody should be ready and prepared to vote.
That's the Senate President John Cullerton. The Democrat says the time is coming for a vote on a grand bargain for a budget proposal. Before that, we also heard from Republican Senator Jason Berrickman of Bloomington and Democratic Representative Lou Lang of Skokie, also Governor Bruce Rauner in there from his State of the State address. Well, a lot of things to talk about this week. Among them, that bipartisan Senate budget plan stalled this week. What happens with that? And the Attorney General getting involved in the budget impasse. We'll talk about it and a whole lot more today on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. I'm joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio reporter. And we're joined this week by Monique Garcia of the Chicago Tribune. Monique, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Brian, Monique, I'm going to start with you. Lisa Madigan, she's going to court, the Attorney General, filing a motion that could stop state workers from being paid. Give us the idea of what she's trying to accomplish here.
Well, she says it pretty plainly in her legal motion. She basically says the governor and the legislature have abdicated their responsibility to pass a state budget, and it's only through the grace of this individual judge, and I think there's one additional court order out there, that the tens of thousands of state employees in Illinois have been getting paid despite there not being a budget. And so she says it's time for that court order to be lifted, and the General Assembly and governor need to do their jobs, do their constitutional duty, and pass a budget.
And more specifically, she's asked for that decision to come by the end of February. I think February 28th is the date that she has in her court filing, saying that will give lawmakers and the governor plenty of time to strike an agreement. I mean, people who've been watching this might think that's a little optimistic, but the timing is interesting. This filing comes as the Senate this week had a whole flurry of conversations on a larger budget deal. That effort stalled a little bit, but the senators say they're going to try again when they come back here in February in a few weeks.
Well, I got to say, why now for her to take this action?
That's the big question. The governor has raised concerns that this is more about politics. This morning he was in Chicago and said, hey, perhaps this is her effort to try to derail those talks. The Republican Party notes her relationship with Speaker Madigan. The Attorney General is, of course, Speaker Madigan's daughter, and says maybe this is all them in cahoots to try to derail a larger agreement and just keep government clunking along stopgap budget to stopgap budget.
I, however, would say that if you look back at the history of this, we have not had a real government shutdown in Illinois, and the legal filing talks about this a little bit. Typically, when a governor, or I should say an executive branch and the legislative branch can't come together on a budget, like we've seen that in Washington, the government actually shuts down. You know, we have national parks have to close. There are bad press visuals of World War II veterans taking honor flights to Washington, D.C., and they can't access the World War II memorial. So there becomes pressure on these officials to actually get a budget passed. We haven't had that in Illinois, in part because the legislature and the governor agreed to fund schools, so schools have stayed open. We've had other court orders that say certain state payments have to go out automatically. There are other laws that make certain state payments automatically. But the biggest chunk of that is that you can still get your driver's license renewed. You can still get all kinds of state services. The state parks have been open. The Abraham Lincoln Museum here in Springfield has remained open, all because of this one or two court orders that say state employees can still be getting paid, even though the legislature has never approved spending that money.
That's a very good point. And largely the pain that's been felt during this budget impasse has been on social service providers who aren't getting funded, on universities and community colleges who aren't receiving state dollars, and on vendors and contractors who do business with the state and aren't being paid on time. As has been discussed on the show many times before, debt keeps rising. And right now, I think we're sitting at about $11.2 billion bill in bills that are being unpaid this week. And that figure is expected to hit about $15 billion by the end of the fiscal year in July.
And Charlie, why don't you weigh in on this as well?
Well, it occurs to me that, as has been said already, there are only one or two pressure points that could have brought this impasse to an end, one of which was if suddenly public schools didn't open in the fall. Another would have been if state workers weren't paid. Another might have been if the prisons, for example, were no longer provided food by their suppliers because the suppliers weren't being paid. And so we speculated about what might finally drive a bargain because, as Brian said, we've kind of been coasting along. There are people who are truly suffering, people who depend on human services and aren't getting them. But the vast majority of the Illinois populace, they feel nothing. However, if in fact the issue of paying state employees without an appropriation, if it gets carried through, if the judge refuses Madigan's request and it's appealed to the Illinois Supreme Court, in my mind, it's pretty clear the Supreme Court will say, as it said in the past, you can't pay workers without an appropriation. And that would bring intense pressure on the governor and legislative leaders to finalize some type of budget to avoid the catastrophe that would happen if suddenly there were no payment for state workers.
Well, I guess I don't want to sound that I maybe disagree on that a little bit, but I do wonder if Governor Bruce Rauner, who has been at odds with especially the AFSCME union, and he has not indicated in any way that he wants workers to work without being paid, but he, you know, it does make me wonder whether or not that this would force their hand, if this could also be a situation where this drags out, where they tell workers show up and come to work even though, you know, your paycheck's not there right now.
I don't think you can do that legally.
Well, I mean, I'd wonder. Go ahead.
Well, the Attorney General has argued that without an appropriation, it's not that workers wouldn't get paid at all, but that they would only get paid the federal minimum wage. She says that there are, you know, federal labor laws in place that make sure we're going to pay you something, but for a lot of state employees, that's far below what they're earning. And interestingly, this comes right as AFSCME is preparing to start voting on Monday on whether or not they want to strike. And there have been reports that the governor's office has prepared for a worst-case scenario and that he would have the National Guard staff some of these positions if required.
And that, I think, would send a chill up a lot of state workers' spines right now, because I think they feel like maybe we're testing somebody who is not necessarily on our side to begin with, and we could open a door for something like that.
Well, it occurs to me that there are a lot of jobs being done by state workers that folks who are trained in the National Guard to basically be soldiers aren't necessarily competent to come in and be home caregivers or to do some of the complex calculations that occur at the Department of Revenue or to be Environmental Protection Agency inspectors, child abuse investigators. I mean, this notion of, oh, yeah, we can just replace everybody, I think it's kind of demeaning to the folks who do the day-to-day work for the state. And it also would put quite a burden on National Guard's people who have civilian careers, but they don't necessarily match up in the civilian career with what they might be called upon to do as a National Guardsman supplanting regular state workers.
And Brian, go ahead. I think you were going to talk there.
Well, I just think this is a time of peril, though, for the AFSCME union in particular. The governor has kind of made it one of the centerpieces of his, even before he came into office, he used to go around calling them AFSCME, and was really, has made it a centerpiece to try and strike at them. One of his first executive orders was to end the fair share provision that says that even if you're not a member of the union, you have to pay some fee for the services that the union provides. And he tried to join a lawsuit to that effect. He's driven a really hard bargain in contract negotiations to the point that we're talking, you know, AFSCME's preparing to have a strike vote potentially. Or I shouldn't say the vote is going to happen. Whether they strike depends on how the membership weighs in. And so I think AFSCME's in an interesting position here, because this is a governor who has spoken positively about what Ronald Reagan did when he fired the air traffic controllers in the early 1980s. And I think he sees himself as the person who can finally change the relationship of public employee unions and state government in Illinois. And this has been one of the driving things that has really motivated him throughout his tenure. And it'll be interesting to see how the union navigates this.
And Monique, the AFSCME union, I believe, has come out against Lisa Madigan's court filing. They're not necessarily in favor of that, at least publicly. That's what they've said.
Sure. Publicly, what they said last night, they released a statement saying, you know, officially we will respond in court. But they made it very clear that they were disheartened by this decision and very concerned about the turmoil that this could cause for state workers and in turn state government and all of the citizens who rely on it from day to day.
Well, the Senate budget plan, the thing that I think is interesting about this is that it could have happened any time over the last many months, and it didn't happen until now. This is a time when there does seem to at least be some effort at compromise. How successful it will be, we don't know, in the state Senate to try to work out a compromise plan. Brian, Monique, does this set back that effort? I know that some people have come out and said, yes, it does. But according to what we heard yesterday from the Senate, is when they come back, be prepared to vote.
Yeah, we saw particularly on the Republican side last night a lot of statements after Attorney General Madigan's legal filing, a lot of statements saying this will upset the balance of delicate negotiations. On the other hand, Senate President John Cullerton, who we heard at the top of the show, is the one saying, you know what, it's time to choose. We need to come back and vote on this stuff. He said anything that helps us spur us toward a deal, maybe, you know, that's a good thing. I think that there has been a lot of concern that this kind of Rube Goldberg resolution, which has more casinos and tax increases, and at one point there was a minimum wage hike in there, although that's been removed in the latest version. I mean, there are a lot of moving parts of changes to the workers' compensation system. I think that there have been a lot of cold feet because we've seen a broad array of interest groups from labor to big business coming out against this. If you light a fire under the state, though, and say that things are really going to start getting even worse than they've been, and it's going to become a lot more publicly visible, and the everyday citizens of Illinois, who in polling have said the state budget impasse is not affecting them, might suddenly start to take notice, perhaps it could spur people to overcome their objections to voting to either change workers' compensation benefits or raise taxes or whatever your particular ideological hang-up in this compromise might be.
The question will become, what is easier? Is it easier to pursue simply a one-time kind of funding agreement to keep employees paid and pass that through both chambers? Or do you really gather your strength here and try to resolve this once and for all in this larger package that the Senate is pushing? That said, while the Senate is very optimistic and hopeful and trying to forge ahead, the question remains on what the House would do. Speaker Madigan has said, you know, we're pursuing our own agenda here. It might not necessarily align completely with things that the governor wants. We'll look at what he wants, but we're not going to sacrifice middle-class workers, which is kind of his code for saying we're not on board with workers' comp changes and some of these other collective bargaining changes that the governor has made a prerequisite for a larger budget deal.
And even beyond what's the specific language of those changes and the ideas of how you might change workers' comp, the speaker, I think, remains opposed to the very idea of saying one has to be tied to the other. And integral to this Senate plan is that at one point it was 16 bills, and there was a clause that says if all the other 15 don't pass and get signed into law, then this one, no peace. It's either all or nothing. Everybody chained together as they go over the cliff. And I think the speaker and other Democrats in particular that I've talked to have an objection to that as the way to do budgets and government in Illinois.
Right. The speaker has long been clear about his defense of the separation of powers, this idea that the legislature is here to act as a check and balance on the executive branch, on the governor's office, and it's simply wrong to let him ride roughshod over this process and to let him interject himself so thoroughly into, you know, day-to-day budget making.
Charlie, nobody's excited to vote for tax increases and maybe even some of the other things that are in that package. You oftentimes have to be backed into a corner to vote for some of those things. And that's what it looks like the Lisa Madigan effort could do. So in some ways, it might actually give new life to this Senate plan.
Well, I think it would enhance the sense of urgency that apparently not all the legislative members feel. It seems to me that there are a lot of people who seem to think that we can solve this problem without me having to sacrifice anything. It's going to be somebody else. And there's a lot of jacking around to try and see who gets the blame. And the Rauner-funded Republican political apparatus keeps blaming everything on Mike Madigan. I think it would be very positive if the governor would call off his dogs and try and have a more conciliatory tone. And I was thinking when Brian mentioned how these pieces were all formally tied together, saying that unless they all pass, none of them will. Back in the day, you didn't need to do that. There were a lot of agreements made and a lot of budgets passed during my time as a reporter where there was an understanding among the governor and the legislative leaders, we'll pass this bill, then we'll pass that bill, then we'll pass the next bill. It was never in writing. It was never linked in the language of the statutory proposals, but it was there, and there was a level of trust among the leadership with the governor that we will do this, we've agreed to do this in our meeting, and we'll go out and we'll carry it out. I don't think there's that level of trust.
And speaking of that, I mean, there's also a situation here where we mentioned that Madigan, we're not sure how he feels about some of the things in this Senate plan. We're really not sure how the governor feels either. He has not come out and, you know, officially said, I endorse this or I don't endorse that, right?
Absolutely not. He was went out of his way to thank the senators and talk about how great it is that people are working together and isn't bipartisan cooperation wonderful. And yet he has avoided addressing any of the specific elements of whether he likes the tax increase, whether it's enough. People have been sort of trying to read the tea leaves of, well, we see that the Illinois Policy Institute, which is a conservative advocacy organization that is very closely tied to the governor's positions on things. We see that the Chamber of Commerce comes out against this. And so there's speculation about, does that indicate that maybe the governor himself does not really like the contours of this agreement? People are just kind of left to wonder. And I think that's another reason that legislators, particularly on the Republican side, are reluctant to go out on too far on a limb to say that they're going to support a tax hike if Lucy is going to pull the football away right as Charlie Brown goes to kick it.
Right. I mean, this is a political consideration on the governor's part. He does not want to come out and be seen as trying to interrupt this process. He wants to be seen as somebody who's willing to work and willing to keep an open mind on this, because he's done his best to paint Democrats, specifically Mike Madigan, as being the obstructionist, as standing in the way. So by standing back and saying, hey, I'll kind of wait to see what comes my way, thanks for doing the heavy lifting, he removes himself from this process. That said, his budget office has weighed in on this. His budget office said that the plan is not balanced. Everyone's pretty clear that they will not get a balanced budget this fiscal year, but if they're going to raise taxes, they say we want to make sure we're balancing the next year's budget. And right now, as it stands, this plan doesn't do it. It's more than $2 billion off. And so that gives Republicans pause. And as Brian said, none of these members want to be out there on the record voting for something that the governor may eventually veto. And then they're left standing there looking like they've abandoned their governor and kind of wondering which direction to head.
Every day that goes by, the eventual tax increase that's going to have to be passed gets bigger, or the cuts to state government services get deeper. Right now, the income tax rate, there are a number of tax proposals. They involve, for a while, there was a talk about a soda pop tax. I think that got taken out of the latest version, but there's a tax on some services like dog grooming, things like that. And the income tax rate is not going back to the 5% rate where it was under Governor Pat Quinn. No, it'll be significantly lower at 4.99 percentage points. Percent for the income tax rate.
And if you ask Republicans why it's that, they just kind of smile and laugh. And it's because the governor campaigned on rolling back taxes. He said, yes, at some point we might have to go up for a little bit to try to help dig us out of this hole, but we'll definitely be much lower than the 5% that was in place under former Democrat Governor Pat Quinn.
Mission accomplished, I guess, there. Charlie, I'm going to give you the last word on the budget. As we move forward, we got a week off of the lawmakers not in Springfield. They'll be coming back early in February. What do you expect between now and then? Are we, you know, I'm sure they're going to hear from constituents.
Yeah, they're going to hear from constituents. They're going to hear from interest groups. And they're all going to be saying basically what I said earlier, don't affect me. Raise the taxes on the other guy, but don't raise my taxes. And I think what we're going to – or don't cut my programs, or don't make these changes in what I like. And I think what everybody in Illinois needs to do is kind of grow up and realize that we have to pay for the services we want. And maybe we need a discussion on exactly what services should we have, what kind of an obligation do we as a society have to our less – to our disadvantaged fellow members, people who suffer from – various mental illnesses or who are homeless, victims of child abuse, that kind of thing. Do we as a society have a responsibility to provide services to them? And if so, what's the fairest way to raise the money to do that instead of just kind of hobbling along and pretending that we can keep getting by spending on programs at a much higher level than our revenue would sustain?
Moving along here, one of the things that got some attention this week came out of Donald Trump and Rahm Emanuel. Even Bruce Rauner made some mention of this, and that is Chicago violence. Donald Trump saying at one point, tweeting that if Chicago can't get a handle on its situation with violence there, the number of murders in the city, it might be time to send in the feds. Monique, Brian, that was not received that warmly by Chicago officials, including Rahm Emanuel.
No, it sure wasn't. So apparently this tweet was fired off after our new president watched a news report about the crime in Chicago. And it garnered an immediate response from Chicago officials who first questioned what it means to send in the feds and then said, you know, we don't need the National Guard here, that will not help patrolling our streets with militarized weapons and tanks and things of that nature will not address some of these underlying causes of violence in the city. And they said, yes, we'll welcome some federal investment to help us fight drug trafficking, to help us fight gun trafficking. But we don't want troops in these neighborhoods. That will not help us spur the economy. That will not help us provide education and some of these other issues that are really at the root of crime in Chicago.
Yeah, and Donald Trump has made Chicago violence an occasional talking point throughout his campaign. He mentioned it during his big convention speech last summer and has talked about even – he's frankly misstated the facts about violence in general in America, although Chicago has seen a huge spike in the number of shootings and murders. Crime is still generally across the country at a historic low over the past several decades. But this has been a big talking point, and as he continues to face other questions about, you know, cabinet officials and Russian interference in the election, this seems to be something where he can get attention back to an area where he feels it's more favorable to himself. So it would not surprise me if he continues to harp on the situation, which, you know, frankly, I'm glad somebody else, you know, probably more people talking about the problem of violence in Chicago is a good thing. How you go about solving that, That's another question. It's a situation that needs attention.
And Governor Rauner talked about it as well, but he got criticized by Mayor Emanuel.
He got criticized by Mayor Emanuel, and he also got criticized by Democrats in the legislature, specifically the Black Caucus, who said, you're calling for a decrease in crime while overseeing a state government that hasn't had a budget in almost 2 years, which means that after-school programs have been cut, child care programs have been cut, anti-violence initiatives have been cut, homeless youth programs have been cut, all of these things that historically help us reduce crime or help us invest in communities are gone. And you're sitting here saying, hey, we need to perhaps invest in some more of this and put more money towards that when you haven't helped us get a budget. And many of them have said, quite frankly, that blood is on the governor's hands here and that he's standing in the way of a deal because he's tied a budget to these larger economic and political reforms that he wants, all the while blaming everyone else for the problems.
And, you know, I would just say I've been following the governor's efforts at criminal justice changes. He wants to reduce the prison population by 25% over the next decade. And he's had a commission working on that. And one of the things that has been pretty consistent from the commissioners is that this is not a cost-saving exercise, that reducing the prison population is not something that will save money. It's something that actually you need to take any savings you might get if you can shut down an individual prison or even a wing of a prison and invest that back in communities so people aren't continuing in lives of crime, so they have other opportunities to pursue jobs and really rebuild these communities that have been largely abandoned in parts of Chicago and many other places across Illinois.
But if you talk to these social service groups who work in these neighborhoods, they have been unable to do that for the better part of 2 years, actually much longer than that. They will argue for decades they've been underfunded by the state and haven't seen the right kind of rate increases they need to really reinvest in these programs. That, of course, has gotten worse under the budget impasse, where every 6 months or so, the rug's pulled out from underneath them. They can't plan for staffing. They've had to totally raid reserves, or they've stretched their borrowing. They've had to cut programs back or have waiting lists to give people help. And they said, that's just not sustainable. How do we provide any kind of stability to the community when we don't have stability ourselves?
And Monique, just about 30 seconds here, but is it possible that there are some people who agree with Donald Trump that are in the state of Illinois, maybe even in Chicago, who say the problem is so bad anything is needed, maybe drastic action like sending in federal troops?
I have not heard that yet. I mean, even the governor, our Republican governor, has said that he rejects the idea of the National Guard going in. What they want is funding to help these kind of programs. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is threatening to cut federal funding to Chicago over immigration issues. So he is not really helping them in the areas that they want.
Okay, our notes from the field, time for that, and we'll go first off with Charlie Wheeler.
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the fact that the grand bargain includes a limited expansion of the sales tax base to include certain services. The legislature's sort of fiscal brain trust, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, released a report a little bit ago talking about what kind of money could be brought in were the state to have the same set of services taxed as in some of our neighboring states, and assuming that services between businesses would not be covered, but services used by a final consumer would be. And they calculated that when it was fully implemented, if we had Iowa's services covered, we'd bring in more than $1 billion a year in additional revenue. Wisconsin would bring in about $600 million because both of those states tax a lot more services than Illinois does. Illinois taxes fewer services than most other states.
All right, and then we'll have to leave it there for today. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Monique Garcia with the Chicago Tribune. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.